from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working with students and families to improve college access and student success for a better West Virginia. West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
Welcome to the legislature today. I'm Andrea Lanham at the State Capitol. Today, teachers, school service personnel, and other public employees return for the second day of a two-day work stoppage as frustrations linger over salaries and health care. Hours ago, leaders of the American Federation of Teachers West Virginia and the West Virginia Education Association announced that the work stoppage will continue Monday. But will it be that, a work stoppage, or a full-on strike? Joining us to discuss this and other issues around the Capitol today are Brad McElhenney with West Virginia Metro News and Ryan Quinn of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me this evening.
We ran down the hall together.
Yes, we did. So let's talk about what just happened. We literally just came from that press release or press conference. Were either of you surprised at the announcement today?
I was at an aspect of it. I don't know about you. I've been hearing the scuttlebutt for the last several days about rolling walkouts around the state, and what was announced instead was all 55 counties again at least on Monday, with the possibility going out thereafter. Does that surprise you?
I had heard about the rolling work stoppages as well, something like, you know, five counties going out per day for the upcoming week for some indeterminate period. But I spoke to Joe White a few days ago. He's the head of the school service personnel union. And he said that on the day of the Saturday rally, when they announced the work stoppages for today and yesterday, the statewide ones, he had posted something on Facebook, or his organization did, saying we're going to have these rolling work stoppages, or at least floating that idea. And everybody who commented on it seemed to just trash it and said, we want more than that. We want stronger action.
So we've heard a lot of their concerns over the pay raise bill and PEIA, but they've also had some other concerns about other educational measures that are going through the legislature. Ryan, what have you covered and what are you hearing as far as other issues?
Yeah, I've written about, I mean, when I started covering the legislature, some of these bills, I guess, started popping up more. Although charter schools was actually pushed when Democrats were in control as well. But, you know, education savings accounts, which is a private school voucher type program that can also fund homeschooling, can allow taxpayer dollars to go to homeschooling. Bills that would reduce the role of seniority in layoffs and teacher transfer issues. A version of that bill actually passed the Senate last legislative session and died in House Education. Both of those types of bills, along with charter schools, haven't even been brought up in committees, and yet teachers are afraid of them because they've been filed and the legislature has shown a willingness to push some of these ideas in previous sessions. Education savings accounts hasn't gotten very far, but seniority did get quite far. And then one that did pass the Senate this session was the bill that is, they refer to it as paycheck protection, the proponents of it, and then the unions call it paycheck deception. But they it's a bill that would require a teacher or anyone who's a member of these unions to actually re-agree each year to have money deducted from their county-issued paychecks and sent to the union as union dues. That's actually passed the Senate, and there is concern about that actually also passing the House.
Now, before we go into some of the other issues that has been discussed today, such as PEIA and the pay raise bill, we actually did talk to the governor earlier today about this work stoppage and some of his reactions to that. Let's take a listen to what he had to say earlier today.
Doing two is going to cost the state $76 million. That's all there is to it. It's $76 million. That's got to come from somewhere. So you've got to fall back in and start cutting stuff. You've got to cut substantial money out of the monies that we put in for commerce. You got to cut, you know, out of tourism, or whether it may be the $2 million that we were going to do the neurosciences at WVU. Got to cut a little piece out of that. You got to cut a little piece, little piece, little piece. And you say, well, that's not enough. That's not enough. Let's do more. Let's do more, you know, and everything. Well, when's enough enough? And I completely sympathize with the fact that they're not happy. I got that. I'm just saying that, look, why doesn't somebody really just stop for a second and say, a year ago, I as a teacher, and I am a teacher, I could say I was scared to death that PEIA was going to 70-30. You know, a year ago, I didn't have one, there was not one thread of me that could have said, I want a pay raise. And if I don't get a pay raise, I'm going on strike. I delivered them from that, did I not? Did I not really make the moves that changed the $500 million deficit into a situation to where today we have black numbers in 12 months? 12 months.
Now, Brad, I know that you guys had talked to the governor as well. What was your reaction to what he had to say as far as this work stoppage?
Well, you know, unfortunately, given his reputation the last few weeks, it was news that he was even here and that he was talking to the media. That was a bit surprising. He began with WSAZ local television today and continued on. But the teachers have been more and more critical of him, as have some of the Democrats, essentially calling him absentee during this situation. You know, when the governor talks about it, he discusses last year and the unfortunately lack of progress that was made, but the teacher pay raise at that time was wound up in this complicated revenue bill that had sales taxes going up, personal income taxes going down. There was so much involved in that, and it was so tightly wound, it was hard for legislators to embrace the whole thing, just because it was complicated. The governor says, you know, believe me, we did a lot of work last year to come to this point, that it's a better economic situation. It probably is a better economic situation, but frankly, he vetoed the first budget in a notable fashion that the legislature came up with last year, and then said he couldn't even put a signature on the second budget. He had a success with the road bond, but that hasn't gone out to bid yet. So, you know, I think the governor might suit himself better by not talking so broadly and beginning to talk more specifically in a way that these teachers can feel that they're making some progress.
Now, Ryan, we've also heard some of the concerns with teachers saying, just with the state of the state, that revenue is better, that the state is in a better situation. Is that part of the concern that you're hearing?
Yeah, Justice originally had quite a rosy picture of the economy that he presented. I think during his State of the State is when he kind of kicked that off. And then, you know, that seems to have been tamped down a little bit, but that was the original picture fed to school employees. And then you come out with a proposal for a 1% increase next year, wherein the previous legislative session, when apparently things were a lot worse for revenue, there was a 2% raise proposed. So I think school employees have been like, well, why is the raise half what it was last year when apparently things are, you know, much better or much brighter according to the governor? Yeah. And so I think that his own picture of the economy is being used against him in this particular instance. And unlike last session, he doesn't propose new tax increases this session. He hasn't proposed any new revenue to my understanding. And he actually said, let's just cut taxes and win, I believe, was his slogan. And so, you know, The governor in the last session, when I guess when he was still registered as a Democrat, clearly was in favor of certain tax increases. And now this session, maybe because he doesn't think they can pass, he's not in favor of raising taxes.
Just cut taxes and win has been used throughout the session as a comparison to the teachers. It was going to be a $140 million phase out of industrial property taxes over a 7-year period. But the teachers are looking at this and going, you know, we're overdue for a raise and you're cutting $140 million from corporations. That's how it's been cast. Mm-hmm. Like the bills you mentioned, it's not gone anywhere, but it's still out there in the conversation to say, where are your priorities?
And with that business inventory tax, the just cut taxes and win, with crossover day coming up, do you anticipate this moving anywhere, or do you think that this has kind of made a difference in that?
Oh boy, I mean, for several weeks now, you know, the teacher situation has caused almost any other spending to come to a halt. And I'm including the tax cut in that, but just cut taxes and win has not made it out of committee. The intermediate appeals court passed the Senate, haven't heard about it in the House. The community college bill that Senator Carmichael was very proud of was not a big expense, maybe what, $7 million?
Yeah, but $7-8 million, yeah.
Boy, it passed the Senate 2 weeks ago maybe, and nowhere in the House. So none of these things have really gone anywhere in the House as delegates try to figure out where they're gonna get the money, both to shore up PEIA short term and to try to meet the teachers somewhere on their salary desires.
And Ryan, I know that we've heard some criticism from the governor with the teacher union saying, well, you supported this 2% pay raise last year, why aren't you supporting it this year? What all have you heard as far as responses to that?
It's the same basic argument about now the economy is supposed to be better and why can't we have a better raise this year if the economy is better? And yeah, that particular point, I think it started off on Tom Rotten's show, maybe that was the genesis of that, where he asked Christine Campbell about that quote previously, and then Dale Lee, I believe, got asked about a quote he made, you know, in the House Education Committee, I believe, yesterday. And so different people in the conservative sphere are bringing up the fact that it seemed that you were okay with this you know, the previous year, and now you're not, and seems to be alleging that this is about an election or it's about the fact that he is now registered as a Republican instead of a Democrat. He has, you know, he has signed a version of the bill that now is 2% next year and then 1% annual raises for the next following 2 years after that. So it's up to the level it was proposed last year and didn't actually pass. But you know, Dale Lee in that meeting yesterday said he wanted, you know, he didn't think 5% raise for next school year is an unreasonable thing.
Now, Brad, have you heard anything else specific? We've heard, well, you said that they were asking for a 5% next year. That wouldn't be unreasonable. As far as what they want for PEIA, what have we heard so far?
I mean, some things have happened. The most recent was out of House Finance Committee and then passed on the floor was a bill that if the state has a surplus at the end of the year, 20% of that surplus would go into the PEIA stabilization fund. And people kind of laugh at that, but the surpluses happen fairly regularly. They're not completely uncommon. So that's not a nothing bill. But if you ask the teachers about it, they say, well, you know, it doesn't go far enough. We want assurances that this program we rely on is going to be stable and our out-of-pocket costs are not going to go through the roof. There have been some other things related to PEIA. You know, just legislators are so motivated. PEIA put into a co-tenancy bill, which is natural gas drilling, and that's kind of hard to explain, but there were some accounts set up for people who can't be found where they would have 7 years to claim their royalties. Well, if they don't get it after 7 years, half of that money now is supposed to be diverted to PEIA. But the 7 years means that there's a 7-year waiting period for that. Not gonna happen right away. The other thing that took shape was oh, help me out here. There was another PIA.
Sports wagering,
which depends on a decision of the U.S. Supreme Court to legalize sports wagering for the entire country. So again, pretty iffy for a group of people who are looking for assurance.
And we also have that $29 million from the Rainy Day Fund that the House passed, but when it got to the Senate, we've heard that the Senate President isn't necessarily the biggest fan of using Rainy Day Funds for that. Now, we did talk to the Senate President earlier about if we don't use the Rainy Day Fund, where does that money come from? So he addressed that, and we also have a clip of him addressing the crowd after today's Senate floor session as well. So let's take a listen to what he had to say.
We are uninterested, frankly, in using one-time money, savings accounts, to shore up long-term obligations. And so we want to use the general revenue budget, the budget of West Virginia, to shore up PEIA and ensure that it's in the base of the budget moving forward. That's a $30 million number. I'm really anticipating that the public employees will be very pleased with that initiative, that we want to use our base building budget to shore up PEI in the long run. Frankly, the long-term fix is in conjunction with the entire escalation of healthcare costs on a national basis. So we know that this is an issue that's perhaps beyond the small state of West Virginia to solve. However, the fact that we've frozen these rates for 17 months, that there will be a select committee and chartered to develop and craft long-term solutions to the issue, I think should provide some people with some confidence that we are committed to a long-term fix to this issue.
I wanted to come out and welcome you to the state capitol.
It's an honor.
Your points are well made. You have every right to make them, and we hear you. We're taking steps to address your issues and concerns. And I want you to know,
we'll be here all next week.
From the Senate's perspective, that we are. I just wanted to say again, thank you for being here. Thank you for making your points. We hear you. We want to do what we can.
Now, Brad, you and I were both out there. We were both in the Senate. Were you kind of surprised that he addressed the crowd? They were booing him.
Well, he did it yesterday also, and it was, frankly, awkward, but surprising. I was just hanging around in the chamber, lollygagging, and out the door he goes, and I said, are you doing what I think you're doing? And he went out and stood on the steps like that, but that time, yesterday, he had his hands in his pockets. He did not gesture or use body language to indicate he wanted to speak, so the crowd just took it like he was leering at them. So this was almost a makeup call. You know, he said today, well, I got some emails that said that I didn't communicate that I wanted to communicate. So out the door he goes again, and he stands there, you know, and you could hear, you guys had good audio, but he was trying to say some things, but there were some folks in the crowd who shouted him down. And then at the end of it, they were chanting, Ojeda, Ojeda, about the congressional candidate who is currently serving in the Senate. So in the Senate, President goes, and he wound up telling us what he wanted to convey.
Now, Ryan, were you kind of surprised by that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I saw only on video, though, what happened the previous time that he went out there. And he just kind of came out in front of the crowd and seemed to just, like, soak in this, like, hatred that was coming at him or this animosity toward him. And didn't say anything, and I didn't see today's him come out there, and so I'm surprised he went out there again, but yeah, he seems to be opposed to the rainy day funding, which is, you know, the essential thing that needs to be, that they're proposing using to actually freeze the benefits for next fiscal year. But he has floated actually taking some of the proposed money out of, I think, commerce and tourism, the places that Governor Justice has proposed increasing by lots of millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, in order to find that $30 million out of general revenue instead.
And Brad, we had just talked to the Senate President right before we got on set tonight. Tell me a little bit about his reaction to this work stoppage continuing on Monday.
Well, he's said all along that he thinks it's illegal, and West Virginia case law actually says so. There's a, you know, they talked in the press conference about a semantic difference, really, about a work stoppage and a strike, meaning that the counties to this point have called off school, have treated it almost like a snow day. But Senator Carmichael is saying they really need to be in the classroom. We need to start our schools up again. I wish they would. And then furthermore, restated his case in front of us to say that he believes that the state is undergoing a fragile recovery, and what the legislature has done so far is what's affordable.
Right. Now, as far, where do we go from here? Because we have crossover day happening here pretty soon. Is there anything that the legislature can do to help alleviate some of their concerns?
You know, in that news conference, in addition to the practical matters, they talked about a tone issue. And so, you know, they're talking about what's said on the floor, and to them, that has indicated probably a lack of respect. And there's been a beef with the union and Senator Carmichael. He talks in terms of union bosses, uses that term. And you can see the signs in the crowd. You can see the sign reaction, or the crowd reaction. So this is just growing, and the Senate has stood out, I think, for holding its position, whereas the teachers want to see some action. So that's going to just continue to come to a head, I think, through next week.
Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, the Senate has passed bills this week that have angered teachers' unions. You know, they went ahead and they passed that bill that, that would remove the retirement benefit that just goes to teacher union leaders. Apparently, they were trying to, Senate leadership was trying to put the the paycheck protection, or maybe it was seniority, one of those issues, into the bill that was actually increasing pay before it passed out without actually including one of those measures that is so opposed by the unions. So, these work stoppages are coming at a time that we're facing. I think Sunday is when bills have to be out of the committees mm-hmm. in their house of origin. Now, there's all sorts of things you can do. So I've been told to keep bills alive, but it would require Democratic support. And to actually waive the rules to keep bills alive that haven't passed out of committees by Sunday. And so that, I think that perhaps this is a bit strategic to not only have work stoppages Thursday and Friday, but to say we're gonna have one Monday as well.
Do you think that the work stoppage is gonna continue past Monday?
I think we'll know a little bit better if some of these bills are dead or even more likely to die by Sunday, by the time Monday rolls around. So I can't predict it. And I really don't know, you know, to how much the union leaders themselves are calling the shots on this, or how much it's actually the membership that's going to make that decision.
Say that is the Senate bell tolling for the floor session taking place now.
We're not evacuating. We're good. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you can tell though they're working evenings at this point also,
yeah,
trying to get these bills through.
Now, Brad, we have a few minutes left. Let's talk about some of the other issues that have gone on this week. There's been a lot of focus and attention on some of the teacher pay issues, PEIA, but what were some of the other things that you covered this week?
I don't remember anything else.
Well, there was the SNAP bill in the House earlier.
The SNAP bill was in the House. There were the consumer protection bill was a little
right.
crazy and caused senators almost to come to blows last Friday, which seems now like a year ago. But you know, the pressure is on all these things, and any issue at this point seems capable of causing hurt feelings or anger or frustration. They're running through the evenings now. The Senate will be here Sunday, and you know, you just feel the energy of these crowds. It's affecting things also. So, what, 15 days left? Expect expect further craziness.
So we only have about a minute left. Just tell me what you plan to cover next week. Of course, the work stoppage is happening Monday. Is there anything on your radar next week?
You know, some people came through talking about a bill that deals with utility rates that may affect the average consumer, and that's very interesting, but I have no idea if I'm going to be able to get to anything, frankly, besides these teachers who are in the hallways.
What about you, Ryan?
Apparently, on Sunday, they're bringing up that state school board bill again, where it would give legislators control over the rules and policies the state school board passes. So, that will be a big one if it moves.
Well, again, thank you both so much for joining us. Again, we have Brad McElhenney with West Virginia Metro News and Ryan Quinn with the Charleston Gazette-Mail. Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes West Virginia Public Broadcasting's sixth full week of the legislature today from the Capitol Building in Charleston. With only 2 weeks remaining in the regular session, we hope you'll join us every weekday evening at 6 for a wrap-up of legislative activity. I'm Andrea Lanham for West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thanks for watching and have a great weekend.